This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Russia's foreign minister is in India to shore up support as a fight over gas purchases simmers with the West. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A meeting between Russia and India's foreign ministers has just wrapped up in Delhi. Top of the agenda was a discussion about how to maintain trade and other relations between the two nations, despite Russia's war in Ukraine. Here's Sergei Lavrov speaking just before the talks began.
We appreciate that India is taking this situation in the entirety of facts, not just in a one-sided way.
The meeting comes as Western governments have roundly rejected an ultimatum set by Russian President Vladimir Putin for payments of Russian natural gas supplies in rubles as opposed to U.S. dollars or euros. It's a move that will help continue to bolster the Russian currency, which has been hard hit by sanctions. But it's not just Europe that's reliant on Russia for energy supplies, and these talks in Delhi today examined how India can continue to pay for the oil it gets from Russia without breaking Western sanctions. We checked in with the BBC's Rajini Vaidyanathan in India's capital just before the two sides sat down.
India buys the largest amount of its arms and weapons from Russia. They've been allies for decades. Often Russia has kind of had India's back at the United Nations. But the key thing is India says it's remaining neutral on this issue.
And so, Rajini, what are we expecting from the outcome of these talks today?
Well, one of the things we've been told will be high on the agenda is the sale of cheap crude oil from Russia to India. One of the challenges is, of course, how payments can be made and stay within sanctions regulations. And Russia is said to have offered India an alternative payment system. India is very keen to stress it buys a very, very small percentage of its energy from Russia at the moment, something like 2%. Most of its energy needs come from the Middle East. India has been very, very keen to point out that it's actually Europe that buys a huge amount of gas and energy from Russia, and therefore the kind of finger shouldn't be pointed here at Delhi. And the US Deputy National Security Advisor was in India on Thursday, and he warned that there would be consequences for nations who try to circumvent sanctions, rules and regulations. A kind of reminder of just how complicated this whole diplomatic situation is.
The BBC's Rajini Vaidyanathan for us in Delhi. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Energy purchases from Russia are also a topic of much discussion in Hungary, where voters this weekend will head to the polls in a general election. Prime Minister Viktor Orban is holding his final pre-election rally today in a closely contested campaign. From the capital, Budapest, the BBC's Nick Thorpe explains how the war has shaped this election.
Well, obviously Hungary is a bordering country with Ukraine, and it's deeply shocking for the Hungarian electorate, for the Hungarian politicians, to have a war raging there. And of course, Russia has invaded Ukraine, and Viktor Orban, the Hungarian Prime Minister for the past 12 years, who's now seeking a record fourth term in office, he has a tradition of close relations with Vladimir Putin. He's met him every year for the past 12 years, and he is the author of what he calls the Hungarian model. So Hungary as an EU member country, as a loyal NATO member country, but also with good relations with Russia.
And to that point, the EU, you know, we saw act very quickly and collectively imposing sanctions when this war started. Hungary has been less willing, though.
Well, Hungary has been lukewarm on sanctions, but at the end of the day, it hasn't vetoed those sanctions. It could have vetoed them, but Hungary points out also that the sanctions shouldn't be extended, or rather, the Hungarian government, Mr. Orban, says no extension of those sanctions to affect, for example, oil and gas. Hungary gets 80-85% of its gas from Russia, and so it would be disastrous if it were to. Also, Hungary is saying that it's, or rather the Hungarian government is saying that it's done a great deal to help Ukrainian refugees, but it's out of tune, if you like, with countries, other NATO countries like Poland in particular, but also Slovakia, Romania. The government says it will not supply weapons to Ukraine because to do so would be to get involved in a war. Ukraine, the Ukrainian president, has in turn accused Mr. Orban basically of taking Russia's side, and the opposition in this election, Peter Markizoy and the six-party, this disparate six-party alliance facing Fidesz, Viktor Orban's party, say that they ought to, Hungary ought to sort of take part with the EU, with NATO, and supply weapons and help Ukraine much more than it's doing now, even in a military sense, in this conflict. And then that bounces back to Mr. Orban, and his very strong media domination then accuses the opposition here of being the party of war.
And how is the public reacting to this? How, what is the expectation for the outcome of this election?
Opinion polls suggest it will be close, but that Fidesz will win again. Of course, opinion polls can get these things wrong. Judging on the past election, 4 years ago, you had 2.6 million voters for the governing side, Mr. Orban, and 2.6 million for the opposition. And I think the figures are looking pretty similar now, so everything will hinge on the undecided voters, somewhere between 300,000 and perhaps 600,000 voters. And here, the governing side have a big advantage. They have a big media domination, 476 media outlets, radio, television, online portals, local newspapers, and so the opposition's going into this election at a big disadvantage. But I have to say, you know, they're trying very hard. They've mobilized a huge number of activists across the country to count votes and so on. So, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion at all, this election.
The BBC's Nick Thorpe for us in Budapest. Thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome, Victoria.
Inflation has been a topic of conversation at many dinner tables across the world recently. Fresh figures today show consumer prices across 19 Eurozone countries soared to 7.5% last month to another record high. Checking the numbers, though, that has not dented regional stock benchmarks, which are boosted by gains in the banking sector. Stocks are up in the 0.3% to 0.9% range. Prices and economic hardship are, though, becoming harder to deal with in Sri Lanka. That is the sound of hundreds of demonstrators who tried to storm the president's residence overnight. Police say they arrested more than 50 people outraged by the worst economic crisis to hit the country since independence in 1948. The BBC's Aina Aslam explains the country has essentially come to a standstill.
There are critical shortages of essential items like food, petrol, and medicines. The government's imposed unprecedented 13-hour-long power cuts, so several offices have sent staff home and the internet is down in many areas. A lot of hospitals are also no longer performing non-emergency operations. It all came to a head on Thursday evening, when thousands of Sri Lankans marched to President Gotabaya Rajapaksa's house with signs, candles, and torches calling for him to step down. This man was there.
I think this is the darkest period in our country's history. We can't do anything with our money. I can't buy petrol or gas. Our leaders are essentially killing us.
The government recently cut taxes, which means they're making less revenue and borrowing more, further increasing their already crippling national debt. And the country's foreign exchange reserves have fallen 70% in the past 2 years, which means it can't afford to import things like fuel. But we know the government is negotiating an emergency bailout package with the International Monetary Fund and is also seeking help from neighboring China and India.
That's the BBC's Aina Aslam reporting from Sri Lanka's capital, Colombo, there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.